Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good. Nate Silver was not adored by many conservatives just before the 2012 election when he predicted that President Obama would win by an electoral margin that turned out to be exactly right. He got every state correct. And so ever since then, he's kind of been this numbers running genius. He's had recent NCAA bracket odds out there. I'm not sure how well his bracket is doing. But the more important political story at the moment is that John Carl of ABC went to visit Nate Silver and his crew at 538.com to get his take on where things stand with the 2014 midterm elections, and specifically whether Republicans have decent odds of taking over the Senate. They need six seats to do so. Nate Silver basically gives the Republicans a net pickup of three before we even get into the tough races. He says West Virginia, South Dakota, and Montana are in the Republican column already. And then the two broke down some of the more competitive races.
Arkansas is one where they've been pretty consistently ahead in the polls. You know, we give them probably a 70% chance of winning in Arkansas.
Okay, and next up is Louisiana.
Louisiana, about 55%. North Carolina, it's more of a purple state, so that's as close to 50-50 as it gets.
Nate gives the GOP a good shot in Alaska and even in blue states Michigan, Colorado, and Iowa. Nate's projection is a 40% chance Democrats hold on, but a 60% chance the GOP wins, with a 30% shot they win big.
Yeah, there's a plus or minus five in there, so the Republicans could win as many as 11 seats and could be as little as one seat. So he's kind of hedging his bets a little bit at this point, and the numbers could change. But as we've been saying all along here, Jim, right now things are looking pretty good for a GOP majority if everybody plays their cards right.
One of the kind of amusing things about Nate Silver, yes, he's a smart guy. He has found ways to apply statistical analysis to the outcomes of political races. Although if you read into how he does it, it's not that different from how everyone else does. You know, he kind of starts out with the national political mood, and then he looks at the polling in each particular state, and then he adds a value for the quality of each candidate. He admits it's kind of subjective, but you can kind of measure it by looking at fundraising and stuff like that. So what he does is he churns a lot of numbers and ends up with what some people would say is a conventional wisdom, except that because he told Obama fans what they wanted to hear through much of 2008 and then much of 2012, he is now basically treated as the oracle amongst Democratic grassroots. They loved him. When he says it, it's going to happen. They have remarkable faith in him, except now he's telling them things they don't want to hear. And all of a sudden, you know, the DSCC, which was citing him in fundraising things, is now basically put out a long memo this morning that basically says, nuh-uh, no way. And his assessment is reasonably accurate, which is that, look, things are breaking, you know, for the Republicans right now. Still a lot of road ahead of us. They're more likely than not to win, you know, the six seats they need. Could be more. Could be less. You know, a lot of things could happen between now and then. The reaction to him is going to be pretty fascinating. And I think the question now is, does this make Democrats, you know, say, oh, got to donate more money, got to get more excited, got to, you know, get people fired up, got to, you know, pull out all the stops? Or does this dispirit them? Does it become kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, a conventional wisdom in which you don't want to donate to Kay Hagan because she's probably going to lose? You don't want to donate to Pryor in Arkansas because he's a dead man walking. Sometimes, you know, conventional wisdom and momentum feeds upon themselves. And if you're thinking of backing the Republican candidates, well, look, you know, you're not just donating to, you know, what you're hoping are good candidates. You're donating to people who have a good shot of being in the majority next year and perhaps of having a greater say in the policies going forward.
We'll certainly see. And as we know, there are still primaries to be had in a lot of these states. Some cases, we already know who the Republican candidate will be, but we'll have a better idea certainly by the end of the summer. All right. We really have two bad martinis today. Probably classify either one of them as crazy in a sick and twisted way, but we'll just take them as bad martinis one at a time. This one comes to us from the Daily Telegraph in Britain. This is just horrible. The bodies of thousands of aborted and miscarried babies were incinerated as clinical waste, with some even used to heat hospitals, an investigation has found. 10 National Health Service trusts have admitted burning fetal remains alongside other rubbish, while two others used the bodies in waste-to-energy plants, which generate power for heat. Last night, the Department of Health issued an instant ban on the practice, which Health Minister Dr. Dan Poulter branded totally unacceptable. At least 15,500 fetal remains were incinerated by 27 NHS trusts over the last 2 years alone. Jim, we know in the culture of abortion that it leads to a devaluing of life, both living and deceased, but Man, it's hard to imagine being more craven than this.
I'm usually full of snark and sarcasm and quips in moments like this. And I'm kind of left speechless. It suggests that there is something really disturbing going on in UK society. I think it might also be worthwhile to check hospitals and clinics around here. God forbid this is going on in our country. You want to believe you live in a good society. You want to believe you live in a good place, and that, you know, you look around the world, the chaos and, you know, problems in the Middle East, problems in Russia, and you know, far off countries in which there's unspeakable brutality. And then you hear this occurring in a country and a culture that's not that different from ours, and you're just kind of left shaken by the possibility this could be going on. Apparently going on for a while, going on a large scale, and for all of the people who had to have known about this, it apparently never crossed their mind that this could be wrong. Glad that they're stopping it, but we were still left with the possibility that lots and lots of people seem to think this was, you know, normal operating procedure, which is horrifying, and hopefully it stirs a little bit of soul searching over in the UK.
Certainly the case. And this, what is this, waste to energy plan? It almost sounds like the green movement in some cases is more value than human life, at least in the minds of some. We don't want to paint with too wide of a brush, but obviously if it went on as long as it did, there was clearly, as you mentioned, a lot of people that didn't seem to have a problem with it. But hopefully it is not happening here, as you also mentioned. All right, on to the other horrible martini of the day, and that is related to Edward Snowden. As Business Insider is reporting today, it appears that just in the past few months, Jim, Russia has gotten much, much better at evading NSA spying techniques, and it's becoming very frustrating, particularly at a time when Russia is up to a lot of no good to its West. And it just also happens to be a few months after Edward Snowden set up shop there. And folks like Mike Rogers, the head of the House Intelligence Committee, as well as others, seem to think there's not much of a coincidence here.
Yeah, I mean, Rogers is basically saying that he is under the influence, or that he's basically saying you can't find a counterintelligence official or person in the intelligence community who doesn't think that Snowden isn't under the influence of Russians, which means by the transitory property, Edward Snowden is under the influence of vodka, because all Russians are under the influence of vodka at all times. Quips aside, this isn't stunning, but I remember seeing a story from Eli Lake a day or two before Russia rolled into Crimea, basically declaring that U.S. was convinced that this was not an invasion because they were not transporting enough medical personnel, meaning that they weren't expecting a battle. Well, as we saw, Russia took over Crimea without that much of a battle. So either, you know, Russia knew that a lot of folks in the Crimean Peninsula wouldn't be putting up much resistance, or they had done their homework and made sure that there'd be no one in any position to put up enough resistance. But either way, it seemed like a strangely confident, strangely direct assessment that was quoted by Eli Lake over at the Daily Beast. And then within a day, it's like, nope, here come the Russian tanks. They're moving in. It's you know, by the time anybody could react to it, Russia had already rolled in. So you have the analysis failure, and you can't help but wonder, was the analysis failure driven by this inability to detect what Russia was talking about? Now, as they say in this article, there are two possibilities. Either the Russians didn't talk about it over the types of electronic venues that the NSA can tap into, or they found new ways to work around them. And that this is kind of under what's kind of fascinating and kind of particularly disturbing about this is that, look, when Snowden jumped, and he's still over there in Russia, we were now left in this situation of thinking, what does he know and what is he telling them and what does Russia now know? Well, I think we can now say our entire ability to eavesdrop on Russia appears to have been completely compromised, and we're back to square one again. And obviously Russia is a country where we'd like to know a heck of a lot about what they're thinking, what they're saying to each other, what they're ordering their military assets to do and things like that. So this is why they continue talk of, you know, oh, Snowden should get a pardon and stuff like that. So ridiculous that he is just now completely compromised U.S. national security. And this has nothing to do with U.S. Americans' privacy and all the stuff that people are saying, oh, he deserves the Nobel Prize for and things like this. You know, this is now he is outright helping Vladimir Putin. And how you can argue that guy's helping the cause of peace is beyond me.
No, I think a lot of people would agree that he's a traitor, and perhaps those who lionize him to some extent will see that his actions are not those of a patriot at all, especially if he's working as carefully with the Russians as we think.
And Jim, wait, hang on. It's the action of a Russian patriot.
I guess he's a Russian patriot now. You know, given the lack of levity due to the serious stories we had today, I had to mention this because I'm looking at the New York Times talking about Chairman Rogers very concerned about Snowden working with the Russians. And of course, the New York Times, along with many other print news outlets, uses AP style. So throughout the story, they're talking about how Mr. Rogers is very concerned about how Edward Snowden is working with the Russians and how Mr. Rogers is going to be conducting a full-scale investigation. So next time you go to the land of make-believe, it's going to be a very different plot line, I think.
Oh, the Russians just took the trolley. Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Hello, boys and girls. Can you say traitor? I knew you could. We needed that after the, you know, like, so yeah. So today's second martini was more of a public service announcement than our traditional, you know, examining the world style. We'll be funny again tomorrow, folks. We promise.
There you go. Jim, have a good day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.